definitely preserve this. And I will mention something that's kind of interesting. Before we even began the webinar, I checked, maybe 10 minutes before the webinar, and we already had a number of questions that had been submitted over the Internet. So it looks like we're going to have, some lively discussion today, and people are very interested, and they want to know a lot of information. So I think what we'll do, we'll jump right into it. I don't know a whole lot, although I've followed what you've been doing for a while now, since this question came up. I don't know a whole lot about your background or how you came to do what you do. I do know that you're a doctor and an attorney. I believe you're a dentist and an attorney. Yes. And you're Dr. Orley Tates Esquire, and you have the Defend Our Freedoms Foundation. And you're working very, very tirelessly and passionately on the whole issue of the constitutionality and the legality of Obama occupying the Oval Office and that whole question. And you have the world's leading Obama eligibility challenge website, which is OrleyTatesEsq.com. That's OrleyTatesEsq.com. Folks can find more information there about this. But what I want to do is maybe if you would, just in an initial way to start this, Dr. Tates, is give us a little bit about your background, since I don't really have a bio here, and how you came around to be involved in issues of a freedom nature, patriot, or whatever we want to call that, and then how you came into this Obama issue, if you would. Thank you.
Well, I was born in the former Soviet Union. I was born in a communist country under communist dictatorship. So to me, the freedoms that we've enjoyed until now are very precious because I have seen a country without such freedoms. And when Obama started running for presidency, I was greatly alarmed. Anything and everything that I heard about him rang a bell. This is something that I've seen and heard. I could tell that it resembles what I've seen in the communist Soviet Union. And part of it, what I could see and detect, was pathological lying. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. A woman was saying loud, so I'm not sure what she... pathological lying coming from Obama. We would anything. Well, here's a man who was talking about creating jobs and creating 3 million jobs. And I could tell that there is absolutely nothing in his economic program that has any potential of creating jobs. And clearly we saw during this year that he did not create jobs and we were losing 500,000 jobs every month. And I believe that he knew that that nothing of a kind will happen, that he is lying. But, you know, what I could see is his ability to lie with a straight face, his ability to look you in the eyes and just lie and say what he feels will have him elected, promoted, and that's it. And one of the issues he was talking about, of course, was transparency, transparency in government. And the first thing that he did was sealing his records by executive order that was issued next day after the election. And up to date, he did not unseal his vital records. And I'm just going to give a short overview of what is still sealed so that people will understand what are we talking about. A lot of people know about it. I've been talking about it for a year and a half. I've done, I think, over 600 shows. I've seen there were something like 700 videos of interviews on the Internet. But just in case people do not have the overview, here are the issues. Well, first of all, we never had a judicial hearing that would resolve the issue of whether somebody with split allegiance, with dual citizenship, can be the President of the United States. And we do have writings contemporaneous with the Constitution explaining the meaning of the word natural-born citizen. As you know, in order to be the president, you have to be a natural-born citizen. And Constitution does not provide explanation, definition, what does it mean? So you have to look in the legal treaties, legal dictionaries, during that time in explaining what it means. And the one that was widely used is Vattel, Emery de Vattel, that states that natural-born citizen is one who is born in the country to parents who don't owe allegiance to other sovereignties. And the problem with Obama is that, of course, his father was never a U.S. citizen. He came here on a student visa, citizen of Kenya, which was a British colony at the time, whereby, according to British Nationality Act of 1948, Obama was British citizen at birth, and then when Kenya became an independent nation in 63, he became Kenyan citizen, and when his mother remarried, when she married an Indonesian citizen, the family immigrated to Indonesia, he got Indonesian citizenship. So this is an issue that needs to be resolved. And, of course, Obama and his supporters kept saying, well, we won all the lawsuits. Well, they didn't win anything. The problem is that no case was heard on the merits. The judges repeatedly were saying that nobody has standing to bring the lawsuit. The judges have no jurisdiction. When I brought lawsuits on behalf of the members of the military that were about to be shipped to Iraq and Afghanistan, the judge couldn't really say that there is no standing. Clearly, they had standing. So he came up with another excuse claiming that he doesn't want to get involved in the internal affairs of the military. And based on that, he actually called my case frivolous and sanctioned me $20,000 just for daring to bring this issue to court. So that's one issue that has to be resolved on the merits, that has to be declaratory relief by the courts. Aside from that, so we know that based on his father's citizenship, he owed allegiance to other countries. But there is another problem. Was he really born in this country, and why do we have doubts about it? Well, simply because he refused to unseal his original birth certificate. In spite of over 100 lawsuits, he repeatedly spent $1.7 million fighting those lawsuits. And what would be the reason to spend so much money and fight all those lawsuits if what he is telling is true? He would just take a minute of his time, sign a consent. I, Barack Hussein Obama, consent to release of my original birth certificate that's currently sealed in the health department in the state of Hawaii. Why wouldn't he unseal it? And why did he provide only an abbreviated certification of live birth from 2007? Reason being, this abbreviated document does not provide the name of the hospital, the name of the doctor, or any signatures. The original is supposed to provide all of the above. So the only reasonable explanation is that there is a problem there, that he does not have a birth certificate that would verify his birth in Hawaii. Now, what could be the options? What could be what are the different possibilities? The state of Hawaii is probably the only state in the nation that allows foreign-born children of Hawaiian residents to get Hawaiian birth certificates. And they had a number of statutes going back to 1911 that allowed it. Additionally, they have a statute, 338-5, that allows one to get a birth certificate based on a statement of one relative only. And therefore, we need to get information. Where was he born? What is the hospital? And get what's called a live birth file, or it's also called birthing file or labor and delivery file from that hospital to verify that indeed he was born in this country where there is some verification of what one relative could have written. Now, I was asked a couple of questions. One, why? What would be the reason for the mother to lie and not write that he was born abroad in case he was born abroad? Well, reason being, in 1961, when he was born, the guiding statute was 1952 Immigration Act, whereby because she was under 19 years old, she was not eligible to automatically transfer her citizenship to the mother, to transfer her citizenship to her son. And therefore, in this case, she would have had to apply for U.S. citizenship for her son, and simply it would have taken time. I personally went through the process. It takes about 6 years. You get green card first, then you have to wait 5 years, then you apply. It takes about 6 years, even longer, and you have to pay the fees. You have to pay attorney's fees. It's a hustle, and it takes time. It takes money. If she were simply to lie and write, my son was born here, nobody checks anyways, then he would get the birth certificate right away. He's all set. She can get her welfare checks right away. And I think that was the reason. Another question that I was asked, the birth announcements in the newspapers. Well, there are several issues with those birth announcements. First of all, nobody has ever seen the actual birth announcements in the newspapers, the actual newspaper with those birth announcements. People saw some kind of copies on the internet, as you know, those can be manipulated any way you want. Two, even if there would have been a birth announcement, anybody can provide information to a newspaper. I can call the newspaper today and say that I gave birth yesterday, and they will publish it. What do they care? That's not a document that is acceptable in any court of law. And three, in Hawaii, in those years, the procedure was that all of the birth certificates, ones that are issued based on a statement of one relative and ones that are issued based on a proper birth certificate coming from the hospital, were simply put in one pile. They were all recorded, and the information about those birth certificates was forwarded to Hawaiian News Agency, which forwarded it further to two newspapers, morning paper and evening paper, and that's it. They did not differentiate. They did not state to the newspapers, well, this birth certificate was issued based on a proper hospital birth certificate. And this one, oh, it's a flimsy one that's filled out by the mother, by the grandmother, God knows, but that's what it is. There was no differentiation. And therefore, we need to see the original. It's very simple. Aside from that, he never provided any enrollment forms, any registration forms for universities. And the reason we're asking for those is because there is a good possibility that he enrolled as a foreign exchange student from Indonesia, as he had Indonesian citizenship, and it would be easier for him to get into schools. And we don't even know if, when he came back from Indonesia, he went through proper proceedings in regaining his citizenship. Moreover, in Indonesia, he went by the name Barry Soetoro. Soetoro is the last name of their stepfather. So we don't know if he ever legally changed his name from Soetoro to Obama. There is no record anywhere of him legally changing his name back to Obama. And another piece of evidence, which is probably the most damning, is the fact that he used through his life multiple social security numbers. And I have it confirmed by a number of licensed investigators from around the nation, and national official databases that are used by U.S. government. And it's interesting that none of the social security numbers were issued in the state of Hawaii. So who usually uses invalid social security numbers? People that were not born in this country. Usually this is done by legal aliens. And therefore, I filed a number of legal actions looking to unseal all of those records, get the truth out, and move on. And I was really persecuted, attacked, viciously attacked by the media, by a couple of judges. And keep in mind, judges are federal employees. Who is the top federal employee? The president. Judges want promotion. That's where it stands. I currently have 3 cases on appeal in different courts of appeals, and I have a case in the District of Columbia in front of Chief Judge of the District of Columbia, Royce Lambert. There are more cases coming. There are more actions that are coming, but I'm going to keep that under wraps until it becomes public knowledge. Since I've been subjected to so many attacks and so many vicious attacks, I'm trying not to provide any information until it becomes public knowledge, and I have to provide it. With Judge Lambert in D.C., aside from filing actual legal action, I also filed an application for preliminary injunction. I'm asking basically to expedite this process because by the 26th of February, I'm supposed to respond to the California bar in relation to the issue of the sanctions assessed against me in Georgia. So I need to provide this information, and therefore I'm asking for expedited handling. So let me go ahead and answer a few questions that you have, and I can see what interests your listeners. Are we on the air, or it doesn't sound like we're on the air?
No, everyone's muted out. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to start in with some questions here. Just a moment. I did have one thing that was really lingering with me that I wanted to be sure and address, and you touched on it. You had mentioned that. What has happened is you've received attacks and criticism and that sort of thing, and I've noticed that it's come actually from both sides of the aisle because you're hitting a real core issue, and a lot of people will say, you know, on the left, they'll say, oh, it's just a Republican thing. You're attacking Democrats, and it's partisan, and other people will, you know, progressives oppose it, and Democrats that support Obama, they just think it's Democrat bashing, and then on the right, you have people that saying, well, look, it's just it's a diversion from real issues. We're off on this tangent when there's bigger fish to fry, and it's irrelevant anyway, and it makes us look ridiculous. And so, I mean, how would you maybe address and let
Absolutely.
People know
yeah,
why this
yeah.
issue is paramountly important? It's very important.
Yeah. You know, that's a very good question, and it's interesting that indeed lately – there were some attacks from conservative talk show hosts and conservative commentators. And the idea is, and the school of thought, that at this point, actually, some in the Republican Party feel that Obama's continued presence in the White House actually helps the Republican Party in the long run, because his rating went down so significantly. At this point, he's a lame duck president. His approval rating went down from 86% when he was elected at the top of the hype to now, I believe, below 40%, and it ranges depending on the day and depending on the poll, but he lost more than half of his luster. And a number of leaders of the Republican Party feel that let's keep him there for 3 more years. It will completely destroy the Democratic Party, and we will have landslide elections in 2010 and 2012. But I am concerned for 2 reasons. One, it's extremely dangerous. It's dangerous for the nation to have somebody who is illegitimate in such a high position, and specifically because he has executive powers. God knows what he can do using those powers. Things that those leaders in the Republican Party might not even envision today. There is another interesting issue. The only actually conservative news outlet that we know of in mainstream media is Fox. The rest are pretty much cookie cutter clones of each other. Fox is different. However, what I've been saying for a year and a half, if you listen closely, what Fox is nothing but a pressure valve to let out some steam so that people don't rise and don't grab their pitchforks and guns and not start shooting the power elite. That's what it is. When you think about it, Fox would not talk about eligibility, which is the only issue which would remove Obama out of office rather quickly. They would, and what I've been saying again and again, those talk show hosts at Fox, they're allowed to do some barking. Yeah, they're unhappy and they're doing some barking, but they would not touch on the issue which would actually make a difference. And that's why I call them pressure relief valve.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Okay, yes. Let me do this then. Let me go and we will. I just want to remind everybody that we're speaking with Dr. Orly Tates, Esquire, and looking at her work with the Obama eligibility question. And she is also going to be one of the presenters, the key presenters at the Freedom Law School's 2010 Take Back America Health and Freedom Conference. That's being held in Southern California, March 12th through 15th, in fact, at the Ontario Hilton Hotel. To find out more about that conference, go to freedomlawconference.com. That's freedomlawconference.com. And incidentally, that particular conference is going to be incredible, as evidenced by the types of presenters we've had for the last few weeks. And you will find that conference is free. You can go ahead and register for it. Donations are greatly appreciated, but due to the economy and the conditions today, they wanted to make sure that the information gets out, that these presenters get showcased, and that people have access to it, and that money not be the deterrent, and that those who can contribute will do so, and everything will work accordingly. Now, I'm going to take some questions here in just a second, and I want to invite anyone else.
Actually, before I forget, let me make an announcement.
Sure.
Next Saturday, I will be speaking at the Tea Party Fair at Volusia County in Florida. It's very close to Daytona, Florida, and I was told that typically they have really large crowds, 10,000 or more, and it's going to be next Saturday. I will be doing more presentations in New York and Washington, D.C., and what I would ask the listeners is to go on my website, which is orlytatesesq.com, orlytaitzesq.com, and I post their upcoming TV appearances, radio interviews, and live appearances. I've also recorded some documentaries. I was contacted by documentary filmmakers from different countries, from England, from Russia, NBC as well, and I will be posting information on when those documentaries and interviews will be aired.
Oh, great. And by the way, has Russia Today interviewed you?
Oh, yeah. And actually, you can see the first interview on my website. There is a link to it, so you can actually listen to that interview. It's English edition, and I've done a number of interviews to Russian newspapers in Russian. Those were posted on my website. One thing, of course, I've mentioned to my supporters, I've experienced a lot of hacking. It's just a nightmare. People hack into my websites. They've destroyed a couple. This is a third website that I have, and they erase files, corrupt files, and I have to repost particularly information that is damaging to Obama, like statements by licensed investigators showing that he used multiple Social Security numbers and that he is using Social Security numbers of the deceased and numbers that were never signed. Those are being erased quite often. That goes real fast. And by the way, I can give you a number. It's 042-684425. Go to Selective Service. It's the easiest thing to see. Go to Selective Service page, click on check registration, enter this number, and Barack Obama, you'll see that's the number. And what's interesting about it, that's Social Security number that was issued in the state of Connecticut to an individual who got it late in life, I guess when this individual needed to get welfare, Medicare benefits, and this individual was born in 1890. Clearly, Obama was not born in 1890, and here's evidence of him using stolen Social Security number. I mean, this is so despicable that in this country, we have a president using stolen Social Security numbers, and all of their criminals, I call them criminals in the media, are attacking me. And, you know, day of reckoning will come where people will have to be held accountable for what they're doing. This is just absolutely despicable what's been going on in the media, in different branches of government that are not stepping up to the plate. And one other issue that's really important, each and every citizen can become active and can do his share. And it's not just donating. And by the way, you can go on my website, it's at orlytatesq.com. PayPal button is there, my address is there, and you can donate. I'm doing this pro bono. But aside from that, you can write to California Bar. They will have to review the sanctions assessed by this judge Land in Georgia. And you can write to them, letting them know that there is nothing frivolous in asking verification of legitimacy of the commander-in-chief by the members of the military. There is nothing frivolous in that. And the fact that it was called frivolous and I was assessed sanctions, that's just outrageous. The attorneys' bars exist in order to assist the public, to protect the public against fraud. And that's what I'm doing. I'm protecting the public against fraud perpetrated by Barack Obama, and I think everybody should be demanding that California Bar, as well as other bars, step up to the plate and protect me and assist me. They have legal funds, that they have financial resources, they have legal resources, and they should be helping me in this fight. If they, as attorneys of the bar and committee of the bar, have real integrity.
Well, if we honor the Constitution and we honor rule of law and we honor what's correct, you know, correct and moral and right, then it seems that this issue would be very clear. But it's just, you know, it's many efforts by what's often called the dominant criminal minority that is currently ruling us that has to change.
Yeah.
It really does. Anyway, I did want to say that before we launch into these questions, that anyone who wants to join the conversation and ask a question, they can, if they're on the phone line, they can dial *2 on their phone keypad, and we'll be able to unmute them at the appropriate time. Or if you're online, just type your question in that small question box underneath the link that you utilize. And we'll see that you type your question in and submit it, and we'll see that question and be able to ask it. James Gregg in Wichita, Kansas, asks, one, why have you not filed this case into the D.C. District Court under that court's quo warranto statute 2 or statute?
I did. That's exactly what I did. I filed quo warranto. So.
Okay, good.
Then check sign next.
Okay, and the second question, these questions about Obama's citizenship status have been going on for 8 years since he ran for the Senate. Will it ever be resolved within a time frame that actually makes any difference?
Well, it depends on you. It depends on the public. It depends on the citizens. If people demand and revolt and, prepare, go to the store, make some science and put together a group of people and protest. Protest in front of the White House, if you're in D.C., protest in front of the courthouses, in front of governmental buildings. Demand answers. When they see a large number of people protesting, when the congressmen and senators see that when they are being arrogant and refusing to answer those questions, and people throw them out of office, they're losing their livelihood, they're losing their position. So when it's going to, so to say, cut, close, you know, when it's going to affect them personally, I think then there will be more of a push on part of the Congress, on part of Senate, to have this issue heard on the merits. Then they will hear it in Congress, in judicial committees of Congress and Senate. There will be more pressure on the judiciary to hear it on the merits. So it depends on the people of this nation.
Okay. Well, James of Wichita also asks, this issue is the key to the questions of governmental legitimacy. If it is true that Obama is a non-citizen or otherwise unqualified, then the implications are that there is an active and ongoing criminal conspiracy to defraud the American public by a vast majority of elected and unelected government officials. Does this mean that the government itself would be found guilty in a RICO Act complaint? How could that be pursued against the government?
Well, you know what, theoretically, yes. Practically, you know, we live in the real world, and not everything that you want to achieve, you can achieve. And I doubt that we will be able to have large indictments and prosecutions of a lot of people in the government. Now, there is another issue. I believe that a few people know of Obama's lack of eligibility. I think Nancy Pelosi knows because she was the one that signed the certificates of candidate, or at least she had reason to believe that he is not eligible because there was some changing, there was a change in wording there. But some in the government and Congress and Senate might not have known about the real issues, but are simply gutless, are afraid to raise this issue because they were attacked by Obama's ilk, by Obama's minions. They were told that they are racist. And I'm just sick and tired of this because this has nothing to do with race. I was recently asked by Pastor Manning to do a mock trial on this issue in his church during the Columbia University graduation ceremonies to show that this is not a racist issue. It's not black against white. It's not white against black. It's not Obama's half-black part against his half-white part. It's issue of fraud. So I think some people might be found guilty, but realistically speaking, I don't believe that many will be found guilty. You know, you have to, at some point, you have to cut your losses and move on.
Yes. Well, you know, it seems to me that another issue that seems pretty obvious is that how compromisable Obama would be if the elite that are ruling or controlling him were to threaten to blow this open and have him, you know, gotten out unless he did certain things that needed to be done. He's got to follow an agenda or else.
And that's one of the reasons why we have to hear this issue in court as soon as possible. A number of his decisions are questionable at best. The moment he was elected, I remember one of his first executive orders was to give $900 million to Gaza, which is run by Hamas, one of the most ruthless, militant, radical Muslim organizations. At the same time, he cut $500 million from the budget of U.S. Army veterans. What does it tell you? Where does his allegiance lie?
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. It really is. Ronald Nelson in Salem, Missouri, asks, what must be done to get the courts to hear the case? Is it time for massive protests in front of the Serval District Courts and the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, the only court where the case is heard is, you know, my case is the last one to be heard, to be quite honest, because there were over 100 cases that were dismissed. We do have cases that are sitting in the courts of appeals, but that might take a year until anything is done. Courts of appeals are notorious for marinating cases for a long time. It can be a year, it can be 2 years, and knowing who the defendant is can be 3 years. By the time there is next election, they might hear the case. So in terms of an ongoing case where discovery can be ordered, my case is the only one, and that's in D.C. It's U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. And I think it will help if people are protesting and demanding to hear the case. We're not saying that the judge needs to decide in my favor. We're not saying that the judge needs to give me a certain amount of money in damages. We're saying, let's just hear the case on the merits. Let's just see those documents. Let's have declaratory relief on the issues, and we'll go from there. And of course, it will help when people are protesting, that when people are on the streets with signs in front of Department of Justice, Department of Homeland Security, White House, and so forth. Aside from that, there is something that's called amicus curiae, which some people are saying amicus curiae, some people say amicus curiae. It's a Latin term which means friend of the court. And what people need to understand, that not only attorneys can be friends of the court, ordinary citizens can be friends of the court too. And all you need to do is write to the judge. And the judge in my case is the chief judge for the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. It's Royce Lambert. And you can write to Honorable Judge Royce Lambert, a motion for leave of court to file the attached amicus curiae. And then you attach this, your brief, your letter, called amicus curiae. If you're a lawyer, you'll know how to do it. If you're not a lawyer, you can put down your reasoning, your ideas, whatever you know about law and constitution, including this brief. And that's what you as a citizen can do. And send a copy to me. Go on my website. My address is there. And I might publish some of those amicus curiae, regardless of whether the judge decides to include those in the docket or not. But I can definitely include those on my website. this way people have right to express their opinion. As a matter of fact, when I had my case, Lightfoot v. Bowen, on behalf of Vice Presidential Candidate for Ron Paul, Gail Lightfoot, about 500,000 people have written to the Supreme Court of the United States. Unfortunately, Supreme Court, after hearing the case in conference, did not go to oral argument. But I'm not quite sure if they even heard it in conference, because I saw Justice Scalia afterwards, and I asked why the case was not heard, and he had no knowledge of the case ever existing. And that's the case that supposedly was heard in conference of all 9 justices. How could that happen?
Wow, that's really something. We've got Bob in Albany, New York, and he says, "Hello, Earl Orley. Two-part question regarding your case filed in the District Court, District of Columbia District Court, Orley Tates versus Barack Hussein Obama. First, is that the court that has jurisdiction over the corporate government? And second, what is the status of that lawsuit? Any chance of actually being heard? Thanks, Orley Bob."
Well, first of all, that's supposedly the court where it's supposed to be filed. And the reason I'm saying that is because you probably know I had a case in California where originally the judge stated on the record that there is jurisdiction in his court. And later on, Obama was able to place an attorney working for his defense firm, Perkins Coie, Robert Bauer's firm, as a law clerk for this judge. And after this placement, the judge changed his opinion and said that he no longer has jurisdiction and I should go to the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, and that's why I refiled it. And again, whether it if there is any chance of it being heard, of course. And if Judge Lambert follows the law and the Constitution, he will hear it, and he will hear it shortly. As I said, I filed an application for preliminary injunction asking for it to be heard very soon, because I'm supposed to respond to the California bar on the 26th. I have submitted the application for preliminary injunction last week, and it was supposed to be docketed on Monday, and it was not docketed yet. I called yesterday, asked why. I was told that because it was snowing in D.C. last week, the court was closed, they're backed up. One of my supporters called the court yesterday yet again, and the clerk promised that it will be docketed. Yes, well, that was supposed to be docketed yesterday, was not done. Hopefully it will be docketed today. And preliminary injunctions are supposed to be heard within 20 days. I asked for oral argument, and according to the rules of that court, the judge either has to grant the oral argument or provide a decision on this application within 20 days. So very soon we will see what's going to happen. And as a matter of fact, when I talked to the clerk, she stated that they will honor the date when the brief was received. So it's not going to, the docketing is not going to state today. It's going to be sort of back docketed a few days. So bottom line, we'll have about 2 weeks to wait for it either to be heard in court in oral argument, or for Judge Lambert to provide a decision, a written decision.
Okay. We have Ronald Nelson in Salem, Missouri. Are there citizen groups and or individuals willing to finance for direct mailings and other media advertisements on a national basis to bring the critical facts of this case to the public's attention? Have the major talk show hosts been fully informed of the facts and merits of this action? And then lastly, why do you think they're hesitant to bring this cause to the full attention of the public?
Well, I have provided information to different groups, and a lot of groups have published information on my cases. I was interviewed by a lot of talk show hosts. I was on Mike Savage's show, G. Gordon Liddy, on Lou Dobbs, Rick Roberts, Steve Malzberg, numerous shows, as I said, I think over 600 shows by now. Today, according to studies done and polls done by America Online, over 80% of the public knows about this issue. Pew poll, I believe, says 85%. So vast majority of the citizens of this nation knows about this issue. It's not lack of knowledge. It's the fact that we have a power elite that runs this country. We have, bottom line, a small group of billionaires, of oligarchs that are running this country. And these are the people that have in their little back pocket most of our quote-unquote mainstream media and our Congress and Senate through the campaign contributions, through lobbying positions. And those are the people that put Obama in office because he is convenient. He is the puppet that they were betting on, and they have their goals. Look at the billions and trillions of dollars leaving U.S. Treasury going in directions unknown. So it's too good of an opportunity to pass on, and that is the reason why this issue did not air, why there wasn't a serious discussion on mainstream TV, why so few in the government stepped up to the plate. But as I said, people are starting to speak up through voting, as we've seen that there were changes in typically blue states that became red, Virginia, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. The candidates that came out of the left field suddenly won the elections, And there is a real threat to people that were considered the pillars of our power elite. Somebody like Senator McCain, who has unlimited financial resources. His wife came from a family of multimillionaires. Money is no object. Well-known senator is now in danger of losing his senatorial seat because he wasn't open to the issues, and specifically this issue. There are a number of senators that are at risk of losing their positions. And I think little by little they will start to speak up. It's interesting that not long ago, Jay Rockefeller went on record stating that Obama is not believable. You know, when somebody like Jay Rockefeller makes such a statement, you know it's time to jump ship. You know that things are not too rosy for Obama.
Yes.
Absolutely. Any other questions?
Okay. We've got, let's see. Oh, James Grames in Wichita was, oh, I see, this is a technical thing. Connectivity to the program is being interrupted for him. He said he got bounced off a couple of times. I would say I just Skyped your message over to our technical wizard, and he is he checked things out, and he says it has to be on his end. There's nothing wrong with it. I know in the past we've been hacked. We've had some issues, and we've had to take some extra layers of protection and made some changes, but I would say the one thing you can do also is hit refresh on your page anytime you have a difficulty, and sometimes that will straighten it out. So we'll see. But anyway, let's move on to another question. We've got Frank in Long Beach. The Federal Register has Executive Order 13489 signed by Obama on the 27th of January, just days after his inauguration, to block disclosure of his private records. This immediate action is rather suspicious. What comments do you have regarding this? Thank you. You did actually comment before, I think.
I included it in the pleadings. It's interesting. Yeah. I included it in the pleadings in Georgia, where Judge Lambert couldn't care less stated that my action, legal action, is frivolous and sanctioned me at $20,000 for bringing a frivolous action. And it's interesting that mainstream media, I read some reports, that those reporters were saying, well, only Orly Pates could translate her sanctions for bringing frivolous lawsuit into a tool of uncovering Obama's records. Well, you know, the sanctions, what was frivolous specifically is that I was looking for Obama's records. So that's where it stands. You know, I brought anything and everything. At this point, I feel that so much information and so much evidence was brought to court that nothing you bring would make a difference unless you have one judge with integrity and guts who is willing to hear the case. Because if judges have no integrity, have no fortitude of character, no matter what you bring, they just, sorry for the expression, don't give a damn.
Okay. You have Rose in Huntington Beach. She asks, one, can't you have ICE file an allegation against Obama as an alleged illegal alien? And two, if Obama and the libs pass amnesty, wouldn't that make the case moot, even if he is an illegal alien? And three, the Internet birth certificate has blackened out information so that it is not a legal document, and Attorney Berg says it is a forged document, according to forensic experts. Three-part question.
Okay. First of all, in terms of ICE, ICE is part of the federal government. Who's in charge of federal government? It's Obama. So the chance of them doing anything is zero. Nobody in federal government will do a thing specifically because Obama is at the helm of the government. Second, in regards to illegals, that would be retroactive. Plus, for the president, you need more than just citizenship. You need natural born status. So even if there is amnesty, it would not change his fate, because he was supposed to be a natural born citizen, and he was supposed to be a natural born citizen before he became the president. So that would not work retroactively and would not be applicable to him. Lastly, the fact that there was a blackened area in what he posted on the internet. It's true, it was blackened. However, they did post another version where it was not blackened. It was the number, and they disclosed that number. But again, they did not provide information on what basis did they issue this document. And lastly, in regards to Attorney Philip Burke, it's such an irony that he is talking about forgery, because the whole issue, and you know, ones that know or don't know about it, with Philip Burke is that he brought actually a legal action against me in Pennsylvania for $880 million. He came up with $880 million. And he was seeking temporary restraining order to restrain my speech and silence me. And why was he doing that? I had an issue of hacking into my PayPal account, where I filed a report with the FBI, and a volunteer webmaster who was helping me at a time stated, "Oh, it's going to reflect badly on me. Take back the report or get off my server." When I tried to get off the server, she locked me out of the website. She made a deal with Phil Burke, where she used the website for my foundation and in soliciting donations for herself, and also she used the website of my foundation to promote him. But moreover, at the same time, I got a phone call from one of his former volunteers stating that the person who prepared the legal action that he filed for him, his legal assistant, Lisa Liberi, is a convicted document forger. 10 felony convictions of forgery of documents, forgery of an official seal, and grand theft. I had verified it with a licensed investigator. I have verified this with a district attorney who prosecuted her. I talked to her probation officer, with everybody, pretty much everybody, and I verified, indeed, the woman is a convicted forger. And, you know, when an attorney works with an assistant who is a convicted document forger, nothing coming out of his office can be considered genuine. It will be suspect specifically because of her background of forgery. And I contacted him and I asked him for information regarding the originals of those affidavits from Kenya that he included in his legal actions, and I referred to in my cases, a number of other attorneys referred to, and he absolutely refused to allow me to see those originals, and he refused to let forensic document experts to see the originals. And at this point, it's, you know, the situation with Philip Burke, ironically, is very similar to the situation with Obama. Both of them are submitting documents that might be abbreviated documents and absolutely refusing to show the originals. So, I mean, this is just appalling that a licensed attorney could behave in such a manner. And what he tried to do, he tried to limit my speech. He came up with like hundreds and hundreds and by now probably thousands of pages of garbage. And the judge basically gave him an order to show cause why he even filed this case in Pennsylvania before he would even hear it on the merits, because there was no jurisdiction. And I just posted on my website, there was a decision from the Circuit Court of Appeals where they denied 11 motions and requests for judicial notice from Philip Burke. So, I mean, his case is pretty much dead, and there was a slap lawsuit to begin with, total harassment, and just despicable behavior on part of a licensed attorney.
Okay. Well, I know we're at the hour point, and we do have some more questions, and I know you, your time is very important. Do you have time to entertain more questions, or do
well,
you have other
well, let's, yeah, let's finish quickly. Yeah, I'll give
okay.
short answers.
Okay, we have James in Wichita says the Republican Party doesn't want the Obama deception exposed, because to do so would also expose the Republican leadership as being complicit in the criminal deception of Obama's election. Any comment to that?
Well, it's actually very similar to a couple of prior questions, we've already touched on that.
Okay.
And I don't know specifically who in the Republican Party knew that there was deception, who suspected there was deception. When we have discovery, we will find out. But I suspect that the way this case will turn is that because of the way the world turns, not too many people will end up going to prison. I think that the number of people involved will be limited, and I suspect that the issue will be decided on the fraud committed with the Social Security numbers, which is an issue that is more localized to Obama versus vast conspiracy, so it wouldn't touch on many other people.
Okay. We've got Guy in Nashua. Dr. Tate, don't you think it would be smarter if you answered the press with questions such as, why are you accepting an incomplete birth record, and why isn't his Social Security number from Hawaii? Asking questions, which is the best way to handle a teenager.
Oh, yeah, I did this time and again. Usually with people that have an agenda, no matter what you do, you're talking to the wall.
Yeah, okay. Rose in Huntington Beach, doesn't the American people have standing, as I wrote, each U.S. justice and started and stated that the American people have standing because they're this jeopardizes the welfare and safety of the American people, since all other government agencies must prove their citizenship by producing valid IDs or they aren't hired. And two, doesn't this failure to prove his citizenship by the courts set a precedent so future illegal aliens can apply for the office of U.S. president?
Well, absolutely. And I agree with Rose. I do believe that every citizen should have the right and standing to question Obama. And it's interesting that what we've seen that in the last few years, the number of cases that are actually heard by the federal courts is smaller and smaller. More and more cases are thrown out of court due to lack of jurisdiction or standing. And people are losing their rights. And that's why I have to play by the rules of the game. Yes, I agree with Rose and so many others that every citizen should have standing. But this is the game. Those are the rules. They are saying that only people that have particularized standing can bring such actions. And at this point, because of their retaliations, they have created a standing for me, because now I've been harmed, I can show standing.
Okay. We do have a couple of people that are on the phone bridge line, and I'll go ahead and take, it looks like we have Kim in Nashua. Kim, I just unmuted. Are you there?
I am, and it's actually Guy.
Doctor, oh, sorry. Okay.
That's okay. She's already answered my question on the email, so I'll just say that being involved since I was 16 years old, it needs to be said that there's a lot of people that adore this woman and love what she's doing. So go, girl, and don't give up.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
I don't need people to support me.
Okay. And we have, Thomas in Cleveland, Ohio. I just unmuted you. Are you there, Thomas?
I am. Thank you for acknowledging my question. I'll make it very brief. I've just recently, from a friend, received some information with respect to Obama's affiliation or even attendance, which is being seriously questioned, his attendance at Columbia University, given the fact that of the class of 400 of the people that have been interviewed by WorldNet Daily, no one remembers – Obama in attendance of any of their classes or any affiliation whatsoever. And I, for one, find it extremely strange that there's no accountable history or documentation of his having even attended Columbia. Well, there's no picture in the yearbook. There's nothing. And I find that very strange. Would Ms. Tate choose to make a comment about
that? Sure. Yeah, and actually, coincidentally, just yesterday, a couple of days ago, I got a phone call from Pastor Manning, who is one of the well-known pastors in African-American community. He has a big church in Harlem, and he stated that he lived there all his life. He went to college in the area, and he says in those years, there weren't too many African-American students in Columbia University. And Obama, you know, is quite visible. He's a tall guy. He, you know, played basketball. He would have been visible. He said, there is no way this guy would have gone to Columbia and lived in Harlem, and I would not have known about him, would have met him, and nobody remembers him living in Harlem. And few people that he used as references, there are a lot of holes and a lot of inconsistencies in what they were saying. So their testimonies are very questionable. And here's another piece of information that's really interesting, that the attorney that was placed as a clerk for Judge Carter in California, who helped, so to say, Judge Carter to change his opinion, what we found out, he went through an interesting program where in one document we found that he got his law degree from Columbia University. In one reference directory, it says Columbia University Law School. But that another reference directory shows a different law school, Komenist Law School in Bratislava, Slovakia. So my guess is that there is some kind of program with Columbia University where people can get credit for studying abroad or doing some kind of work abroad, and God knows what they're doing, and they are getting degrees from Columbia by reciprocity. And that might have been the case with Obama. I found something else quite interesting. Another investigator has found that not only Obama used multiple social security numbers, they found 39 different social security numbers he used, and none of them issued in Hawaii, which is mind-boggling. We also saw different date of birth, and we also saw different origin, and it states Ecuadorian Guinea, not Kenya. And then I found articles about one by name Roman Obama, looks like same age as this Obama, who was a student in University of Patrice Lumumba in Moscow, and that's a student was you know, same last name Obama, origin Ecuadorian Guinea. If there is a connection there, I don't know. I think there are a lot of things that are going on in the area of Seattle, Washington, Bellevue, Washington. I keep stumbling on different locations there. People who've been hacking my website, I can see trades going back there. People who've threatened me with death threats, I see that I could trace them to those areas. Something is going on there. And it's interesting that that clerk that Obama placed with Judge Carter came from the same area as well. That's why we need the discovery. That's why we need one judge with decency, with guts, and with integrity to order discovery. We hope Judge Carter would be the one. That didn't happen, so we'll continue working until we are able to bring about the change. And I will be working on this issue for as long as it takes, whatever it takes. I think by now people don't question my motives and devotion to this matter and tenacity, you know, knowing what I went through. you know, I will continue. Even if he finishes this term, let's say somebody else is elected, and he is no longer the president, I will continue working on the issue until everything is exposed, because it's such an important issue. I remember when I just started on the South, I've written an article saying, Osama bin Laden can be on your next ballot. If we don't clean up this issue, hypothetically speaking, Osama bin Laden can be on our next ballot. All he needs to do is write, I'm eligible. Nobody checks the damn thing. And that's it. You know, with some $700 million from Saudi Arabia, he is set to go. We can't allow this to happen. That's just unacceptable.
Okay. Thomas, does that answer your question?
It does, and I very much appreciate you taking a moment to expound on that. I have several other issues, but I just don't want to take the time now. Specifically, just briefly, a comment or a declaration that was read on the floor of Congress in 1993 by James Traficant with respect to the overall condition of this country. And how we literally sold out in 1913 and the formation of the Federal Reserve, the illegal Internal Revenue Service, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's pretty well documented, but I'd be happy to email or scan or fax that article about a
Look, I know what you're talking about. It's not that I'm not aware of those issues, but you know what? A human being can do only that much. After all, I'm just a human being. And, you know, taking on the President of the United States, it's heavy enough of a burden in itself. I honestly can't envision myself taking on more issues. If I achieve that, that would be enough for me. It will be enough for my lifetime. And then probably I will pass the baton to you or somebody else to tackle other issues. You know, it's been very difficult and stressful for my whole family. It's myself, my husband. I have three children. Just to give you an idea what is being done in the media, I've been called each and every name in the book. They published in a local newspaper of, you know, mainstream newspaper or something, like a song about Orly Pates, and every second word is an F word. And they went to an extent of coming up with music and recording this. They came up with an article, Art About Orly Pates, and this is not bona fide art. It's sick art where they are making artwork of me being absolutely naked, giving birth, holding a bloody placenta with the blood gushing out of it. I mean, this is so sick, and it's all over the internet, and they're selling it on eBay. And there are so many attacks. There was tampering with my car. I've gone through a lot, so I just want to complete one issue. I think that would be enough for my lifetime, and but I'm aware of all the other issues. It's just, you know, you have to draw the line somewhere.
Of course, and I thank you for your focus, and I would encourage your continuing that direction. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thanks.
Okay, and let's see, we do have Floyd in Wichita, Kansas. Are you there, Floyd?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
We hear you, yes.
Go ahead. I think you've got my wife's name. This is Jim Gregg.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how the ID system comes up with that sometimes. I just got one comment, and I want to praise the doctor on the work that she's been doing. But as far as drawing that line in the sand that you speak of, it doesn't stop at the presidency. What your work is doing. And it's exposing is the very international oligarchs that you were talking about a while ago, which is why you're getting pressed, and this is why this issue has become a political third rail in this country. Anybody that touches it is dead politically.
Well, I think that now there is some dissent among the oligarchs as well, and I think the statement by Jay Rockefeller might be the evidence that there is some dissent even amongst them. So we'll have to wait and see how will it pan out. You know, clearly I'm not privy to their meetings, I don't hang out with the Bilderberger Group. I don't hang out with the Trilateral Committee. So I don't have first-hand knowledge of what are they doing. I can gauge by certain metrics that are available to me that things are not all happy and rosy. And we'll see what will be the next move.
Well,
they might decide
the one,
that...
The one point I wanted to make was, though, that... Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. The one point I wanted to make, though, was that the issue, the facts, you know, 85% of the people know about it, but what they know about it is what is being filtered to them from the various parties and political organizations they belong to. But the point is that it's dismissed. You just bring it up and, boom, you're out the door. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to even consider any of the evidence involved in it or the facts of the case. And what it winds up being is it's a political tripwire that if you even bring it up, you're accused of being a violent revolutionary, you know. It's just crazy.
And that's why I feel that it's time for us to have alternative media. And it's happening already. If you look at the ratings of the different radio networks, TV networks, they're going down. They're falling like a rock. People very quickly are getting information on the internet. I personally don't switch on the TV. I do interviews on TV and radio, but I just don't have time, and I feel there's most of the garbage there, so I don't watch. And more people are turning to the internet, and that's the alternative media that is being used. And even on the internet, when they have leaders that they are propping and prepping, but those leaders are starting to say things that don't ring true with the public. Very quickly, the public realizes that and rejects them. For example, let's take Andrew Breitbart. He has done some good investigative work and was successful on a number of issues where he and a number of reporters were able to expose Acorn. And we, of course, need to wait what will be the decision of District Judge Nina Gershon on Acorn. But he did some good work. But the moment Andrew Breitbart decided to use his aura and his popularity to slam us, to slam people who are bringing forward the issue of eligibility, people quickly realized that he was brainwashed or bought and paid, or he sort of blew his cover, and people turned away from Andrew Breitbart. Same thing is happening with Bill O'Reilly. And even Glenn Beck, the moment they started attacking law-abiding, truthful, decent citizens on the issue of eligibility, right away on numerous blogs, we've seen articles stating Beck and O'Reilly blew their cover. They're not to be believed. And so even though we still might listen to some of their reports on some of the issues dealing with economy, dealing with use of natural resources, we no longer believe them and use them as authority on the issue of eligibility. We know that they've been manipulated on this issue, and particularly knowing that the second largest shareholder of Fox is Saudi Arabia, government of Saudi Arabia, Saudi royal family, which wants to see Obama in power. So we know that Beck and O'Reilly and Coltier don't show integrity on that particular issue. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I was thinking about is creating a IPTV program so that we do provide alternative to mainstream media that is not to be believed, so people can get truthful information. And that's what I'm working on right now, aside from eligibility issue.
Okay, any other question which
I could talk with her for days, but thank you.
I wish we had days. okay, well, I certainly appreciate that. And Dr. Tates, I know we have more questions than we can get to today because I know you're busy. And I would invite people to come and meet you at Freedom Law School's 2010 Take Back America Health and Freedom Conference, just a few weeks away here, March 12th through 15th in Ontario, California. Information on that conference, go to freedomlawconference.com. And note that the replay of this, of today's webinar, along with our past webinars, will be posted shortly after the webinar at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And if you would, in just a moment, Dr. Tates, if you have some final thoughts that you'd like to share with us, and then we'll close after that. I want to invite everyone to join us tomorrow. We have another very special webinar. We have a former criminal IRS investigator, Joe Bannister, who was very much committed and a part of the IRS and carried a firearm and was well-trained and very involved and committed, who did a complete flip, and now he's exposing the criminality of the IRS. He's also one of those people that's going to be presenting at this conference. He'll be here tomorrow at the same time on the webinar, so don't miss that. And we have a powerful lineup next week as well. So, you know, certainly don't miss any of these. They're very good. And if you do, just go to republicmagazine.com/webinar and find the replays there. So with that, I think, Dr. Tates, we really appreciate you being here with us today. Maybe give out your contact information again.
Sure.
And then also some closing words.
Well, my contact information, of course, best way to reach me and read about my cases, it's on my website, orlytatesesq.com, orlytatesesq.com. And my address, email address, everything is there. And I do need people to support me because it's a very heavy burden to carry. It's a lot of work that is being done. So I do need... I need people to help me and write to the California Bar, supporting me on the issue of those sanctions in Georgia, and write amicus curiae. If you know somebody in law enforcement who can help me in investigative work, all my information is on my website. Okay?
Well, I certainly appreciate it. You're a very courageous woman, very passionate about this whole cause, and more power to you. We'll be watching it, and we'll look for an update. There could be some major announcements that you'll have at that conference, so folks, don't think you got it all here today. There's so much more. We just skimmed the surface. Well, with that, thank everyone for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. And this officially ends our webinar. Good day. Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.